delighted to be here, and thanks very much, Paul and Casey, for inviting me as well. I'll read some poems from Half Open Door, and then I'll read a number of other poems. So, Thomas Transformer had two lines, and he said, "Every person is a half open door leading to a room for everyone." So I was moved by those two lines, and that's why I chose Half Open Door. So a half open door, I suppose, could be a person or a poem or wherever you want it to be. So this first poem, and it's the first poem in the book, is a short poem, and it mentions that phrase. "Others dance out. When winds batter me fully open to brilliant white light, more than I can take, I shelter in the shade. On a steel grey day, I push the door to a narrow cut, make myself as welcome as a slit throat, light enough for flickering hope. When I'm a half open door, a golden mean, a fine-tuned balance, others dance out and in." My father was from Connemara, and one meaning of Connemara is hounds of the sea. There are other meanings, and you can Google them if you want. The one I'm taking is hounds of the sea. "Hounds and white horses," after Michael Lumley. Here are two scenes from the Hounds of the Sea, lodged in an inner cavern, a no to the priesthood by my father after a 30-day retreat, post-war Kiltegan. A 1947 yes to being a radio officer in white uniform with the Marconi Company, telecommunicating ship's news for the next 3 years. All the way to Durban to see separate black and white queues form for drinking water, a coloured cramp for a colourless liquid. In Madagascar, monkeys threw coconuts at the crew heading up river, which laughing they threw back. A skeletal sharing of memories here, apart from a long train journey inland once made to get to Christmas Mass. Later in the Midlands, he would scent salt spray and whisk the whole family beyond Spittle to the sea of his teenage years. There's a photo of him in sailor whites in the front garden of his childless uncle and aunt who brought him and his brother up. Sometimes when he visited his big family in Gort, he was teased with gentle cruelty to make him feel an outsider. How's the Connemara man? The hurt would soon pass for this man who brought me up with a love of the sea. About a year ago, there was a frog in my throat, so I began to think about the other animals that are in me. I love the animals in me. There's a frog sitting in my throat who makes me croak every time I talk. There's a giraffe in me each time I stretch for a favoured fruit of the Holy Spirit. There's an ageing elephant in me as I remember your birthday but forget where we walked last Sunday. There's a working collie in me who chases feet, sound, rhythm and form and gladly burns in the fire and flow. There's a serious hyena in me who quite frankly is fed up being expected to laugh so much. There's a young rhinoceros in me who relishes the charge in life. There's an ascetic snake in me who values the spirituality of eating one big meal a year. There's an acrobatic kitten in me full of independent living. There's an aping monkey in me who copies others, but not cats. There's a still crocodile in me with the patience of stone. There's an eager eagle in me who flies the broken wing of life. There's a wise owl in me who doesn't know where wisdom comes from. There's a friendly dolphin in me with a high view of human nature. There's a crazy cormorant in me who plays the stage before big-lensed birders. There's a busy bee in me who claims my buzz is bigger than my bite. There's a complex zebra in me who gallops far beyond the idea that things are black and white. There's a hooded crow in me, indifferent to my confident stride and intake of breath.
I forgot to get a glass of water. I think I need one.
Just listen among yourselves for a while. I don't know, it's a desert anyway. In 2013, Lavinia, partner, myself, we went to visit my sister in Stockholm, and I happened to go to an art gallery, and the paintings there, especially self-portraits by Helene Sherevabek, and I was really moved by her self-portraits. There were 13 self-portraits from her as a young woman, and then gradually getting older, and for many years of her life she looked after her mother as well. She was from Finland but Swedish speaking, and she did eventually move back to Stockholm. So here it is. Philosophy of the Face, for artist Elaine Sherevabek, 1862 to 1946. There is your face, your face, your face, and 10 more faces of Elaine Sherevabek in Prince Eugene's old home outside Stockholm, by the sea, the snow, and the trees, February 2013. From Elaine young to Elaine old, to a sketched skull in 45, like a Scandinavian scream with arrow eyes and slanted mouth, a year before the scythe. 1939 self-portrait shows you with a black mouth, one big eye outward, the other in, head and hair like a Tintin cartoon. You look to my right, I read you better than if you were looking straight at me. Earlier, etched on glass at the Stutterheim raincoat shop, Scandinavian melancholy at its driest, another etching that softens me. I sit here looking at a stranger, looking at one of your paintings, probably the bakery, and love the sadness I see in him. This next poem is an elegy to my mother-in-law, who died when she was 91. In 2015, and I really loved her actually. She was a great character. She was from Carlow and then moved into County Tyrone and worked for many years as a local doctor, and was probably on call for probably every weekend for 40 years. Now we have no doc where people mightn't work as many days, to be honest. So, elegy for Helen Riley, 1924 to 2015. The oak leaves are out, but you have left. I think of you lying quietly, proud chin, lilac beads, in final silence. When will the first sounds break in? Who will hear them? Will there be enough air should you need it? You move from, how are you, I'm here, to a full absence I slowly fathom in the aftermath. How many times I kissed your head on greeting and on leaving Esker Road. One of the very few I read poems to. Now and then you would suggest a change and say, I think you're getting better. The oak leaves are out and you have left. This next poem was written in response to a Raymond Carver poem. There was a poem by Raymond Carver. I forget the title of it, but he's diagnosed with lung cancer and he ends up sympathising with the doctor for having to deliver the news. So it's quite funny in the end, really. So here, this is a poem, and the doctor is, so I suppose, okay, in this case, it's the doctor talking to me, so it's not me talking to you. Talking to me. Hey doc, what's up? After Raymond Carver. Yes, it seems to be the case, and it'll be no surprise, you're not going to die just yet. However, we have to break this other news to you. We have discovered an outbreak of extreme ordinariness in your pitiful life. It has probably been there for quite some time, like a stone still crocodile waiting to lightning strike. You may have picked it up when reading broadsheets or possibly from listening to too much late-night news on TV. Normally, in ordinary ordinariness, we don't say a word, but yours is a most serious case. So far, there's no known treatment for it. We're working on it. We'll give you these. Take 2, 5 times a day, and always when with others, for you can be seen. And for now, don't read the trial. This Wrigley CG medication will stop you talking. A good first step to recovery. People will begin to look at you differently. Remember, don't chew and talk at the same time. And please, under no circumstances, blow bubbles. Giving away my age now. In August 1969, trouble broke out in Derry City. So that's 50 years ago. I was in the FCA. Technically, you're supposed to be 17, but I was 16. And FCA is Force of Cousin to Archie, was the Irish for local defence force. And we were in a holiday camp. Well, a holiday camp was called up in Fort Dunry in County Donegal. And, okay, here's a poem. When I was going on 17, Elvis was getting it back together. The Beatles were falling apart. Our truck trundled north. Eamon Lowry sang the Boston Burglar, knew all the words, but not the tune. Stopped at Finner Camp for a bite to eat, moved up country to Fort Dunry. On that sunny day, we cut along the cliff edge to the beach, got ticked off on our return, lay low in the billet, missed the first parade. 4 days later, the lads were dancing in Buncrana. I was on fire duty and washing dishes for 97. They had all spun yarns about who they were, but sheepishly withdrew at midnight because of trouble in Derry, August the 12th, 1969. The next day we were sent home early, a 180-mile trip southward. When my mother saw me, the welcome given, mirrored one given to a son returning from war, which is exactly what it turned out to be. Okay? this one here, I read The Living Mountain by Nan Shepherd, and then I wrote this poem, so I won't say anymore. There you can't blame the water. One, the water says, I mean you no harm, you drown. The rope says, I mean you no good or bad, you hang. On better days, the horse pulls her longboat along the canal. 2, the wind bears you no ill will. You are blown off a cliff edge. Maybe it couldn't happen to a nicer person, but it did dry your clothes yesterday. 3. The snow surrounds you. It is cool but not calculated. It did not intend being part of an avalanche. 4. The tree on top of you is incapable of empathy. It was just as surprised by the storm as you. 5. The mudslide always likes a soft landing. Your log cabin, it would be a log cabin, happened to be along its route. There was no intention to cut off your air. 6. The hairdryer in the bath water feels like a cliche, but did not intend to shock you. 7. And all those cars are merely metal on the move. 8. The river bears you no grudge, nor does it remember you. I'm trying not to say that was published in the Irish Times. So I won't say it.
Glad they have a sense of humour.
Yeah, thanks. Nice to hear that.
That was probably
just in
the New York Times.
Yeah, yeah. You said humor too.
Right, this one, Inch Island is in County Donegal, is a very special place for bird watchers because you've got two causeways joining the mainland to the island. So you have fresh water between the two causeways. So you get freshwater birds and seawater birds. So Inch is mentioned in this short poem. The mathematician in me. A good eye is needed to distinguish between russet brown and olive green, as they are similar in size, both tiny. The latter with its yellow crown weighing in at only 5 grams. The smallest bird in Ireland, the only one smaller than the wren, a continental goldcrest, who flew in here to Inch levels in late October and whom we happened to see on our walk around Inch Lake yesterday. I'm not that tall myself. After a 6 mile run, I'm 65 kilograms, 13,000 gold crests. That's how small this creature is. A life, a lifespan, a heartbeat. How can I not care for the particular? This next poem was written in November 2016. I guess that's the time when people began to realize who the 45th President of the United States was going to be. So I'm not saying that's what inspired the poem, but it may have been some of the background in it. There is a winter. There is a winter in falling. In a dream I fall, a horse is falling too. Both of us falling, falling, as is done in dreams. There is a glass floor to break through, to get to the depth charge of change. No superficial shift, but deep structure, the rooted doings and beings of things. I do not know where these dreams come from. Afraid of being crushed by the horse, I manage to land free, the horse upside down in a trench, there and not there. In the dream, I know it's a dream, yet I fear for the horse as I fear for me. In another dream, on a different night, my right hand is missing. I search for it to store in a freezer and keep it safe. Another hand appears in its place. Yet I still miss what's missing. There is a winter in losing. I fall, the horse falls, a lost hand, two dreams, two nights. There is a winter. Siegfried Sassoon, one of the first lines, part of one of the first lines in his poem, his First World War poet, who died in 1962. He didn't die during the First World War, as you know. But how are things in heaven? So I borrowed that from Sigfrid Sassoon. Lots of times, as you know, our work builds on the work of other poets. An email to Shea. Hello, Shea. How are things in heaven? I imagine John Lennon is surprised. And I'd say it's a human quandary for Jean-Paul Sartre. Have you talked to Fran? I bet he is glad to see you. Is he still 4 or is he 57 now? Do you miss your Monica? How do you occupy your time? Is there time there? Is there a there? Remember Mr. Gunning, who gave me money and a meal for picking potatoes? He rang the cash register, outslid the till. How much do you think it's worth? I said 7 shillings and 6 pence, and he gave me 10 shillings. Tell him I am asking for him. By the way, I sometimes wear your ESB boots when out cutting the grass, especially when the grass is wet. Talk to you soon, your son. This is the last poem in the book, and a few more poems out of it. This is just to finish the section from the book. Room with 4 doors. I have no one thing guiding me. There are many things and nothing. There are 4 doors in this room. The door, old cloister vaulting by Elaine Sherlevebeck, silent jade. Golden glow at base and top. Narrow line of white on left. Draw me to warm light, the other side of the dark door. There's a wooden carving of a shepherd, Je suis, in cream and dark red robes, long brown hair and beard, knocking at a door, asking for help. I have no one thing guiding me. There are many things and nothing. The door to my workplace, made of bright engineered pine, usually open, and when closed, the long clean panel of glass allows light out and in, and softens sound. The 4th door is the door through which you and I meet. Either of us can shut that anytime we choose. Couple of poems from 2014 and then a few more recent ones. Playtime. Was, is, and will be our 3 siblings. Was always was, is. Will be, where's a, trilby. Que sera, sera. Was is the eldest, loves telling stories, her stories, history. Is in the middle, oftentimes seeing herself as something sacramental, momentarily so, I might add. Wilby isn't too sure where to fit in, but will know sometime soon. Que sera, sera. Was mixes with other wases to form where, eating different story dens, flickering clusters manifesting multiple views of the news of the bad old world and the good old earth. So sometimes was is lost for words in where, as it were. Is hangs around with other is's who all play in a group called R. Who never ever imply has-beens. All calmed out in their one-pointedness, here and nowness, mindfulness. Why can't they sometimes just let was and will be themselves? Will be keeps to himself, feeling for now one trilby within sight is enough puff to win the sails of change. Besides, with the known knowns, the known unknowns, the unknown knowns, and the unknown unknowns, who can tell when and where will be will meet a lifelong friend? It's all between times a blessed mystery. Yeah. another one from late 2014. This is when I was beginning to really get into writing poetry. The Muse and Me. I ask the Muse, how do I become a poet? She tells me to cut myself on and come to my senses. Isn't smell important? I wouldn't bother, she sniffs. Surely sound has a place. She lets a pin from her pocket drop on the sand. What about the visual? She says, let me see. Pauses, then, I'll get back to you on that. Taste must have a role. No sweat, says she. You've got to have movement and touch, I say. She flaps her arms like a penguin, walks towards the sunrise, brushes me aside. I call after her. Can I come back this evening when you are in better form? She turns around slowly, looks at me, and says, maybe. I'm not too sure if the next poem works hearing it, but we're going to hear it anyway. I suppose seeing the text would, you know. What I was thinking about, I've got a blue bin which we bought in France, and you crumple up paper and you throw it in the bin. So then I'm just wondering, what's visible? What part of the bunched up paper is visible when you look at it? So, the wonderful blue. A teal-coloured bin from Jolande Vendy with a typical French turn aesthetic collects papyrus, make that paper, tossed by the hand of the poet, crumpled and squashed with varying pressures. First, there is manifold, folded at man. Next, suicide with ici to the fore, which hurts more deeply when it's near, her husband having died first, 6 months before. Third, metapoetic with tap in bold. Turn on, turn off in search of lost ground. Then a caesura, the welcome pile of waiting. Fifth, circadian rhythm, where all that is seen is circa. Sixth, elegy with an exposed leg, remembering the distinctive walk of the dead. Finally, heaven sent, with that heave of effort involved in living a life. Is two more poems okay?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, there we go.
Just go. MLK is in the title, and that's Martin Luther King. I just happened to see an article in the newspaper. Emmett Till is a 14-year-old person from Chicago. And he went on holidays in Money, Mississippi, and he was murdered in 1955. And then I suppose really, but this was some of the roots of the civil rights movement in the United States. So, and also mentioned Rosa Parks, the famous boycott of the bus, Montgomery bus boycott, and the person in charge of that was Martin Luther King. So that's kind of the emergence of Martin Luther King, and that's going back to the mid-50s. It's not about Martin Luther King though. Anyway, if anything happens to me, there will be others to take my place, MLK. Reverend George W. Lee and Emmett Till, May and August 1955, murdered in Belzoni and Money, Mississippi. One casket opened, the other glass topped, for more of the world to see. December 1955, Montgomery, Alabama. Rosa Parks holds onto her bus seat. She says 14-year-old Emmett Till was on her mind at the time. 18 years later, in a van on the way to building a car park in Gatwick Airport, I foolishly asked someone, what's it like being black? Later that day, I wander into a black canteen, pushed back out the door by a wounded wave. 18 years later again, I'm the only white in a Shimla hotel in India, deepening my feel for difference. I am no George Washington Lee or Emmett Till, but maybe I could be a Rosa Parks. I still have a long way to go and thirst for a First Nations fast to break the mold and ready myself for the strengthening.
Whoa!
My final poem now. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Out feeding horses. So it begins, Easter Monday, April the 24th, 1916. Park keeper James Kearney feeds the ducks in St. Stephen's Green. The Irish Citizen Army take over the green, lodge in the College of Surgeons. On a different side of the park, British forces busy themselves into the Shelburne Hotel. Hostilities are lifted daily to allow Keeper Kearney feed the waterfowl. Afterwards, bullets fly again. When asked by De Valera why he isn't fighting, Grandad says someone has to feed the horses. The rebels take over Boland's Bakery. The horses are let go, along with cats and dogs from the animal welfare building next door. De Valera and Company C feed the animals. When the foodstuffs run out, they are released onto the streets of Dublin. Mrs. McDermott sees her old dog wandering by the Liffey. For the first time, he doesn't come when called. The ducks quack and zigzag their way through the 6-day rising, only a little perturbed by the gunfire. When the rebellion is over, there are dead horses on Sackville Street. Thank you very much.